Today on Movie Royalers, we talk about Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yosdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Greetings.
Hello. Yes.
So, I just goofed. This is actually a take two for those people who are... are listening.
That doesn't happen.
We seldom have take twos. We just go.
And just to explain what happened here, we just started like the first 5 minutes of the podcast babbling away without me having hit the record button. So our energy was sky high. And
it was a really good first 5 minutes, which will never happen again.
It was even Yesterday's birthday episode. Let's keep the birthday episode.
Yeah, let's do that.
No, my birthday's been ruined, I tell you.
It was Yesterday's birthday yesterday. Yes, happy birthday, Yesterday.
Many happy returns.
Thank you.
And in honor of said event, we decided to make Yesterday the decider of all things podcast this week.
The king of this podcast.
I've spared you all the soccer update, which I did in our original recording, but other than England won today, yay!
They did!
That's all we need to, say about it. It is a big deal.
Yes.
And I'm still going to put out there on the record that England is going to go to the World Cup final, but they won't win it. So, there we go. All right. So, Yesterday, given that it is your birthday.
Yes, so I call the shots.
And you're
everybody
the decider.
Listens to me. Mm-hmm. Everybody quiet. No, we're here to talk.
What have we created?
I'm kind of scared of birthday.
Monster.
I know. I'm scared of birthday, Yesterday.
Yes, birthday, Yesterday. He's like a big dinosaur who goes, he's like Godzilla chomping on things. But before we get to big dinosaurs, I think we should do Netflix pick. And
you get to go first.
I'm the king of this podcast. I go first. And I'm going to do something I've never done before, which is recommend a movie which is not so good.
How come?
I know. I'll tell you.
Why would you recommend?
I know.
I'm confused.
I'm going to tell you.
It's his birthday. He's out of control.
Yes, I'm out of control. No, it's not an exceptional movie, but it's, for me, the very definition of comfort food.
Go on.
Which is a romantic comedy. And romantic comedies have been done to death. And, you know, there's nothing more, I think, left to do or say. But every once in a while, you have one which just wants you to, you know, sit on your couch with a couple of chocolates and eat and put your feet up. And this is one of those.
Is this the one that you cried and cried and cried to?
No, this is not.
Okay.
No, I did not cry at all. No, this is a very, very, very simple.
Oh, maybe I wasn't out supposed to say that out loud.
Rush me. No, this movie, there's no crying in this movie at all. Just like Tom Hanks famously said in A League of Their Own, there is no crying in baseball. There's no crying in romantic comedies.
Go ahead.
The name of the movie is Set It Up, and I think it's one of Netflix's top-rated shows, movies right now.
Really?
It's a made-for-Netflix movie, and it stars Taye Diggs and Lucy Liu.
Oh, wow.
And
that's an interesting combination.
And they're not the main roles, actually. The main roles, the protagonists are played by Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell. And Glenn Powell, if you remember, was one of the leads in Everybody Wants Some.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's the entire movie set in New York, and it's shot on New York locations. So already there, and it's based in the New York world of advertising and commerce. And it speaks about two assistants who are completely at their wit's end because they have evil, demanding bosses, and they realize that their two bosses will be less evil if they fall in love with each other. So they conspire to make their respective bosses fall in love, and of course, along the way, they land up falling in love.
I gave it away.
Oh no! But it's really a cute movie, and I think in particular Lucy Liu, who we don't see much of.
No,
she's excellent in this, and she plays this really demanding kind of Devil Wears Prada-ish kind of woman. But you know, she's a good boss, and. I don't know. The leads are great. It doesn't aspire to do anything more than just, you know, have you feel good. So set it up.
Very nice.
Because they set up their bosses.
Right. So good but not great.
Correct.
But a good romantic comedy.
Absolutely. Back of the
plane. When it's raining. Saturday, or it's the 4th Saturday, of July, like exactly. It is tomorrow, and you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Yesti, who goes next? Because you have to decide.
I decide that Joe goes next.
Okay. My pick is, well, you know.
It's a lot of drama going on. Yeah.
I pointed at Rashmi and took Joe's name.
I know.
Name. I deflected you.
You did. It was like a soccer move.
It was.
Penalties. Yay. So, given that you went with something slushy feely, nice, slushy-feely. I'm going to go with my nice pick too, because I had two movies I was going to talk about today, but I'll save one for the next podcast. My pick is the movie Captain Underpants, and it's an animation that came out, I think, last year, was it released, or maybe it was the year before?
Maybe a year before.
I watched this on the plane when we were traveling somewhere recently. It was a movie that whose title just put me off. I just thought this was going to be one of those zany. You know, gag a minute kind of kids movies with no real substance to it. And it's a beautiful movie about friendship. It's two friends and their interaction and the way that they tell this story together and the way that they use their imagination, their creativity to create this world of Captain Underpants, is a mythical superhero that they sketch in their book. It's a wonderful, wonderful little movie. I remember it doing very well critically, but not so much commercially. I think the name is off-putting to people. But honestly, what a lovely, if you have like an hour and a half and you want to watch a lovely little movie about friendship, watch Captain Underpants. It's delightful. It's such a fun little movie.
And just to be clear, it's not porn.
Well, there is the other Captain Underpants.
Okay. I think that would be Captain No Underpants.
But yes.
Or Underpantless.
Yes.
But a wonderful movie. And I believe it's based on a comic book of the same name. So it does have kind of, you know, a history to it. But wonderful, wonderful movie. So that would be my pick.
Very good. And Rashmi, you are next.
Okay, also going to do my nice one, which is... it's actually a movie. I think I think I was the only one who saw this at Tribeca last year, and it's called King of Peking, and it's basically about this father and son, and it's set in Beijing, Peking, as it was called at the time, when home entertainment VHS is just coming into the country, and a projectionist basically loses his job, and he's a single parent and kind of fighting to keep his son. And he persuades his son to get into helping him pirate DVDs, videos. Mm. It's just a beautiful movie about that relationship, but fathers also, it's about fathers and sons, and really, you know, it's a loser dad, but the lengths that he goes to try and keep his son. But he's a good guy at heart. He just ends up doing stupid things. Beautiful. And sometimes, you know, it's one of those where the child is the adult in the relationship.
I like those movies.
Really,
I think this sounds like
excellent,
my kind of film.
Excellent movie, King of Peking.
Okay.
And it's in Chinese with subtitles, but don't let that put you off. It's such a beautiful movie about movies.
Okay. So then we have three recommendations.
Yep.
Set It Up, followed by Captain Underpants, and then King of Peking.
Yep.
Not the King of Peking, but just King of Peking.
King of Peking.
Okay, so
interesting. Birthday Yesti is not only making all of this, is not only making all the decisions. He's hosting the show.
I've taken over. Power crazy, hungry.
He's going to dispense with me in a minute. I'm going to be like kicked out of the podcast. Oh God, here we go. All right,
it's my birthday podcast, Joe.
Clearly,
allow me. No, I'm just kidding. So we shall start with our discussion of the two movies. We are going to, as we were discussing before we started recording, it's The Small and the Big.
Yes.
Little Ant-Man and Big Dinosaurs. So we should start with the big dinosaurs, and we should start with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And I'm going to introduce that. So Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is directed by Spanish director J.A. Bayona, who famously made The Orphanage, wonderful, creepy horror film. If you haven't seen, really good. And The Impossible. Remember that movie with Ewan McGregor and...
About the tsunami.
About the tsunami, Naomi Watts. And then last year's wonderfully heartbreaking A Monster Calls. Remember that one?
That was lovely.
Yes,
that was
I
so
do.
Good.
Yeah.
With Liam Neeson and what's her name? British actress.
The one who was in Rogue One.
Correct. That her.
Felicity Jones.
Yes.
Thank you.
So that
we got there between us.
Yes, between the three of us, we got Felicity Jones. Yay. Director Jay Bayona takes over from Colin Trevorrow, who in 2015, gosh, already 3 years ago, directed kind of this reboot, if you will, of the Jurassic Park series. So there was the original movie directed by Steven Spielberg, and then there were two sequels. And then almost 20 years later, in 2015, it was kicked off with Jurassic World instead of Jurassic Park. And in Jurassic World, the first one, there was a new theme park which was built in the same location as the original site of Jurassic Park. And then they created this genetically modified hybrid dinosaur who went on a killing spree. And our heroes prevailed. And here we are 3 years later, this time with Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom. And this Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Thank you. And this time the island's dormant volcano comes alive, horribly alive. And it leaves our heroes, Claire and Owen, played by Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt, to rescue the remaining dinosaurs off that island. And that's the premise of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And the writing credits are given to Derek Connolly, Colin Trevorrow, and Michael Crichton, who originally wrote the Jurassic Park book based on which this whole series started. So, as I mentioned, Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard are back. Rafe Spall plays the bad guy. And there's some interesting additional actors in this movie. James Cromwell from Babe, he's here. Toby Jones is here, having lost a lot of weight, oddly. And Jeff Goldblum is here, and as is our favorite B.D. Wong.
Love ourselves a bit of B.D. Wong.
We do love ourselves a bit of B.D. And Geraldine Chaplin is here as well. So this is a big tentpole summer movie which came with a lot of expectations. What do you guys think about it? Joe, why don't you start us off?
So I was a big fan of Jurassic World from a couple of years ago. I was a big fan of the original Jurassic Park as well. The sequels are whatever. But Jurassic World seemed to be kind of a return to form for the franchise for me. I really enjoyed, you know, the Chris Pratt and the majesty. I think they brought back the majesty that seemed to be lost in sequels like The Lost World and whichever, you know. So I was, you know, quietly anticipating this one. And, you know, it's a real letdown, I think, in so many ways for me, because it's the grandeur of these beasts that seems to have been lost in this weird kind of, you know, evil pharmaceutical company plot of, you know, extracting, you know, dinosaur DNA and compounds and all of this kind of, yeah, it was just a really bizarre way to tell this tale that instead of giving us these big open landscapes, had us stuck in a small house for most of the movie. And so, yeah, it lost everything that was wonderful about Jurassic Park, which is, you know, wonderful, huge, believable dinosaurs in wide open spaces doing dinosaur-like things.
I'm with you. I mean, this just watching another Jurassic movie for me just feels like a bit of a chore. I no longer even care about this world, let alone even remember what happened at the end of the last movie other than Chris Pratt was in it. That said, I don't think it's bad. I think it has an adequate story, albeit totally unbelievable, that has some characters of interest. But for me, all the large CGI animals are blending into one. So recently, you know, we've seen the big crocodile in Rampage, the dinosaurs in Pacific Rim, the dinosaur even in the reboot of Godzilla. And you know, this just feels like yet another CGI extravaganza that didn't quite work. And we're going to talk about scale in the next movie. I didn't understand the scale of this movie because suddenly these big dinosaurs that are bigger than houses are in the house. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't understand how they were on boats and in trucks, and yet we couldn't control them in a park. So there's something really wrong with the kind of the translation of scale. It was adequate. I mean, it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was adequate as well. I mean, I think I go to see these Jurassic Park movies just as popcorn entertainment, and I don't necessarily expect them to be exceptionally fine-tuned. Although, you know, it's interesting, a lot of reviewers kind of harken back to you know, Steven Spielberg's original Jurassic Park and how majestic those animals were and how, you know, we were seeing those rendered beautifully for the first time with their skin moving and them breathing and they, you know, they'd come to life. And there was a sense of awe at watching them, you know. I think there's that first scene where they're looking through the plants and they see this dinosaur walk by and everybody's jaws were on the floor. And I think we have kind of industrialized them by virtue of, you know, all these sequel after sequel. So now they are, you know, Hollywood is kind of stuck with, you know, making a bigger, nastier, meaner, different kind of dinosaur. So by definition, they're just throwing one creature after the other. And a lot of the majesty has been lost. Having said that, I mean, I actually didn't mind the fact that the most of the movie, you know, after the volcano happens and, you know, so many of the animals on the island are kind of destroyed and the few ones which escape are saved and taken to this home of this eccentric millionaire who loves dinosaurs. I actually like the fact that the rest of the movie is all kind of claustrophobic in this little castle, which looks in this little house. And the rest of almost the entire movie plays out in this house. So I think they kind of tried to use that claustrophobia, like you have to find things within the home and so forth. So at no point was I bored. At no point did I feel it was a waste of my time sitting in that seat. But at this point, I think they should be upping the game and they're not upping the game. So a bit of a disappointment, yes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think this one is definitely more of a fairy tale than an action movie in the sense that, you know, we have this family that live in this castle in the middle of nowhere, and there's a little girl who lives with her grandfather, and she has a nanny and a kind of a guy who's in charge of her fortune. It's all very prehistoric in a sense. So it makes it a little bit different, but I hate this idea of sort of weaponizing these dinosaurs now. Like, we've become that desperate that we have to weaponize them.
It's a standard kind of Hollywood thing to do that, and I don't mind that in concept. I just think the execution of it is really lets the movie down, because again, I think what is wonderful about seeing these creatures, yes, I mean, you know, you said, you know, that original scene in Jurassic Park when we first, the suspense and the build-up and the pools of water rippling and, you know, the sense for how awesome and awe-inspiring these creatures are, it's been completely thrown away. And, you know, we have the T-Rex and it does the T-Rex roar, you know, and it, you know, it just doesn't give us any build up to that. I think, you know, they're trying to make more use of the smaller dinosaurs in close spaces. So maybe going down the kind of alien movie route, you know. Okay. Well, you know, why then Jurassic Park? I mean, you know, it doesn't have the world.
Pacific Rim's
for a movie
taken.
That has Jurassic World in the title, it's just, it's,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll give it. I think they made really good use of, I noted this down. Great use of light and mirrors. There's a lot of work that's done with light and mirrors, which I thought created a lot of suspense, and it kind of made use of the house. But unfortunately, halfway through, I worked out the twist.
There's a twist?
Okay. Yeah, see, it's twist. Forgettable.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I mean, I...
The secret.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. Now I get it, finally.
Yeah, I was like, oh, God, really? Okay. So there's a lot of ways it could go on, but...
Correct. Yeah. I mean, as much as those animals failed, those CGI creatures failed to fill me with wonder, I have to admit that they don't look fake, or they don't look, you know, animated. I mean, they're reasonably well rendered on the screen. So I did, you know, when they were there, I was scared, you know, the mean ones I was scared of in the moment. And I think the movie wants to be a Raiders of the Lost Ark, but they forget how difficult it is to be Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's
not
more
anybody
like
can do.
Temple of Doom, where it's like one huge long string of action sequences. I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't stop to breathe at all. It's just.
There's no magic. I mean, I think the issue. The main issue with Jurassic Park, the original, was the magic of it, right? That we've been able to bring these creatures back to life. And then And then really all of these movies become, well, what if one of them escapes and causes havoc? And so that's the end of the story for me. It's like, well, where can it go? What can you do with this?
I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, short of them becoming like Godzilla and just going around destroying
things. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the original one was great because it was all about bringing them back, but now they're back.
Well, it alludes to a kind of a Planet of the Apes type ending where, you know,
they've escaped.
And I'm not going to go crazy about this, but, you know, the one intelligent dinosaur, the one that's above the others.
Right, good point.
Exhibits this kind of decision making at the end of the movie, which sets us up for a sequel where the intelligent one, i.e. Caesar of the dinosaurs, goes off into the Northern California woods, and who knows what we're going to get in part three.
Right.
So it felt very reminiscent of that kind of
reboot as well. Yeah, I didn't even make that connection, but yeah, you're right. So maybe in version 20 we'll have like talking dinosaurs.
Yeah,
with, you know,
I was waiting for
clothing
the big,
on.
You remember that moment from Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
Yeah.
Like, no. I was waiting for the dinosaur.
Talk.
Yeah.
Start talking.
Okay,
The only other thing I wanted to mention, I think the last movie got a lot of flack for the character played by Bryce Dallas Howard because, you know, she was this, I don't know, squeakish kind of
prissy person.
This prissy kind of personality, which kind of seemed to be particularly somewhat mean-spiritedly written. And also she was kind of running around through that entire movie with these high heels. And, you know, she got a lot of flack for that. I think they at least corrected that in this movie. She's much less prissy as a character. She's more kind of involved. And she's not running around with heels. But I also like kind of their banter back and forth. And in this one, there isn't much of that either. And Chris Pratt is when given the chance, he's a very congenial, very likable screen presence, but he's completely overwhelmed by what's going on around because the movie starts running and it doesn't stop. It's just running. And so nobody gets a chance to kind of show themselves because they're too busy either running away from or towards a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite frankly a little bit tired of him being Chris Pratt. In every movie, he's the same character. So if you put like a space suit on him, this would have been, you know, in a different set.
This is Guardians
of the Galaxy. It's, you know, Passengers. It's every movie he is the same person.
Yeah, but it's why you hire Chris Pratt.
Sure. I can wrap this one up. I want this all to go away. This should have stopped at number one, and now we're at number five. We need to know when to stop the franchise. It needs to be made extinct. 3 out of 10.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
5. No?
3.
Okay.
Maybe 4 because it's your birthday, but it's really a 3.
They just announced, I'm sorry to say, that there's going to be a third Jurassic World, and it's going to be directed by Colin Trevorrow, who did the first one. So, sorry. I mean, it's not a complete waste. I did enjoy it while I was in my cinema seat. I just wanted a little bit more from this movie. Visually, it's fun. It kind of plays, you're right, like an action film where you just go from one set piece to another. And I think they, for better or for worse, chose to have this whole thing play out in this castle, which, you know, has its pluses. I mean, my thing is you don't bring in somebody like Geraldine Chaplin or James Cromwell, these really beloved screen legends, and not have them do much. So that kind of felt a little bit wasteful. But, you know, it's visually, it engaged me, 6 out of 10. A very generous 6 out of 10. I was going to do a 5, but then I felt, it's summer. You eat it with buttered popcorn. It's okay.
Yeah, and that's exactly...
Maybe 5.
I'm going with 6. I like this kind of stuff. This kind of stuff doesn't have to fight to win me. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of go in wanting to enjoy a movie like this. And, you know, in fairness to the movie, it was, you know, a 2-hour ride that was genuinely fun. I mean, it's pure popcorn. It's pure Friday night. It's just expectations were a little higher for me because of the love that I have for the franchise, because of the potential for what I feel that these movies can be. You know, they're not your typical monster movie, and that's what we kind of got here. So, 6 out of 10. Liked it, didn't love it, and I'm hopeful for part 3. Given that it's going back to the same hands that did the original Jurassic World, thank you for letting me know that, because I want it to end with a bang.
Yeah, and you know, The most egregious of all, I think, is Jeff Goldblum. I mean, Jeff Goldblum now has become one of those actors who every time, for me at least, when he shows up on screen, I just smile and I'm just happy, like Christopher Walken or some people, you know, some of those actors. And he's there for like three scenes in the movie, and they have the gall at the end to have him come in the last scene to come and lecture us about nature and humans and how we're ruining everything. And it's like, anyway, and the other thing which really annoyed me about the movie was the music. It didn't leave like 5 seconds in the movie to be silent. It was just blaring and blaring, and the drum, boom, 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 boom. It was like, anyway, deafening. I sound like my father.
Yeah,
I'll shut up.
I think that's a really good definition for the movie. It's just deafening. The entire movie is deafening, not, you know, metaphorically as well.
So I think we've said enough about that. And we can move on to smaller scales.
Indeed, we can.
So let's go to Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes, he's introducing this
which
one,
I'm introducing because it's my birthday.
Because it's his birthday.
Yes. So, oh God, this birthday thing is kind of a pain in the butt.
I was going to say, I hope we're not recording on mine.
We'll make sure we do.
That's right.
So Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Thank God it only comes once a year. Yes,
thank God. It's too much. Too much. Okay. So Peyton Reed, who directed Ant-Man in 2015, also in 2015, the same year that the first Jurassic World came out, we got Ant-Man. And he's back with the sequel. The same director, Peyton Reed, also directed Ant-Man and the Wasp this time. And, you know, Ant-Man, of course, is perhaps the least celebrated of all the Marvel superheroes. And, you know, he's back for a second set of adventures. And the original one had Michael Douglas and Evangeline Lilly, and they're all back. Although I don't see Michael Douglas. Oh, Michael Douglas is back as well. I haven't seen this movie. That's why I'm not sure who all is in the cast. So I'm reading the cast here. Includes Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly, Michael Pena, Walton Goggins. Remember what?
Yes.
We love Walton Goggins.
Yes.
Bobby Cannavale, Judy Greer, Michelle Pfeiffer is in this. Oh, very nice. Lawrence Fishburne, Michael Douglas. This is quite the cast. And the writing is by five people, one of whom is Paul Rudd. So Paul Rudd here has writing credits with Chris McKenna, Eric Sommers, Andrew Bearer, and Gabriel Ferrari. And by way of a synopsis, IMDb says that as Scott Lang balances being both a superhero and a father, Hope Van Dyke and Dr. Hank Pym, boy, we sure are in the superheroes world. Look at those names. They present an urgent new mission that finds the Ant-Man fighting alongside the Wasp to uncover secrets from their past. So I couldn't make it for the screening. The both of you saw it, Rashmi.
Can we convince you to go?
Yeah, no, I already want to go.
Okay, yeah, and yeah. This is exactly what I was going
to
say.
I already want to
Nothing
go.
We say is going to stop you going or want you to go, I think. Maybe if you're on the fence. Okay, so before the movie started, I wrote down, I don't like ants and I don't like wasps. I hope I like this movie. I did really like the last Ant-Man movie. This one's a crowd pleaser as far as Marvel movies go, with a gimmick of scale that really pays off. I'm not sure the diehard comic book fans are going to love this because it's not serious enough. But for me, I loved it because it was just so super fun and light and joyful.
There's definitely a huge element of fun in this movie. And I think the Ant-Man movie came with very low expectations on my part when it was originally released. I was already reaching that kind of superhero fatigue. That fatigue is at new levels this year. I feel like even the most joyful of the Marvel movie franchises is exhausting me this year. And so, you know, that did affect my perception of Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's a very fun movie. Mm-hmm. It's very, very quippily and, banter. You know, it's got really good dialogue all the way through. That's, you know, got jokes that are both obvious, but also, you know, the sheer charisma of the lead of Paul Rudd is terrific. My only thing is, the original one felt so inventive with this kind of, you know, growing shrinking mechanic that Ant-Man had, and we just got another dose of more of the same here. There didn't seem to be any more ingenuous ways of using that particular growing, shrinking thing that
No,
he did.
But they have the person who walks through walls now.
Well, so that's a different character.
Right.
Is that the wasp?
Ghost.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the essentially the bad guy. And given that you brought that up, that was the weakest thing about this movie for me, is that we didn't have a sufficiently convincing bad guy in the movie. You know, it felt like there wasn't much at stake. Like, there was world domination is typically the kind of thing superheroes fight for. Here we had somebody who just kind of wanted to, you know, make herself normal again. And as a result, I was just looking for a little bit more at stake in this whole world. But again, I mean, you know, that's kind of nitpicky. It's a superhero movie. I just expect there to be kind of more catastrophe. I'm glad that we didn't have things exploding everywhere. But it's a fun movie. And it's probably the more memorable of all the superhero movies that we've seen this year. I can actually describe the plot to you if you mm-hmm. ask me.
Yeah.
At this point in time, it's been 24 hours since I saw the movie. But with all of the movies, Deadpool and Marvel and Avengers and
Infinity
all of this.
Infinity Stone.
Black Panther. Yeah. I really can't tell anybody what any of those movies were about. Whereas this one, I can pretty much describe the plot. Yeah. So good. Just not... when you add the weight of expectations to the movie that we got before, it takes it down a notch.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to me here.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right, Joe. I think the baddie isn't super bad, but they're bad enough. And I do like what they did with her power, her superpower. It was like the worst. It was like a reimagined Terminator, Judgment Day, right? You know how like...
The molten,
one that they're indestructible because he can turn into any sort of metal and morph, and that's what I liked about this bad guy, is that it was very surprising. There was no getting away from it, so it kind of gave you that claustrophobic feeling, which I really liked. And I like the plot is somewhat simple. I think it makes great fun of the fact that Ant-Man is supposed to be with a monitor in a home, and the way that he has to escape and be out of that situation. So for me, Joe, the stakes came not necessarily with the bad guy, but the loss of potentially him losing his daughter.
No. I mean, I'm not saying that the movie had no stakes. I was just expecting kind of more, the world will end kind of thing. But I guess the world has already ended in the Marvel Universe. I'll just say that.
So some very interesting casting here. So Hannah John-Kamen plays Ava, or the ghost.
Yeah.
She's a British actor.
Yeah, correct.
And then Michelle Pfeiffer, I guess, plays Evangeline, Lily's mom.
Yeah.
And also the Wasp. Anyway, maybe it's a secret. I'll watch the movie.
No, that's secret. Evangeline Lily is the Wasp. She's kind of the... The crime fighting partner to Ant-Man. So they're essentially a duo throughout this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I thought she was great, by the way.
I thought she was great.
She really she's able to kind of hold her own against Paul Rudd, who's effortlessly charming.
He's great. I mean,
he's perfect for at least in the first one.
He is again. And I think that's the joy of the movie comes from, you know, Paul Rudd has this amazing acting ability with making it look effortless. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think given the writing credit, I wonder how much of this was actually ad-lib and kind of improvisational.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of what he says is just spontaneously funny, and it feels very natural.
And Michael Peña, I think, got a little bit annoying for me because he's so cliche in this movie. But
that's the
shtick. But it's so sweet. Yeah, it's kind of the game.
Yeah, no, he's playing he's playing the stereotype.
Yeah,
and so in order to play the stereotype, you know, he takes it way past.
Kicks it up a notch. And there's one he like steals one scene, but again, I'll let you watch it, Yazdi. I mean, Joe and I were talking. We don't talk about what we thought of the movie, but as we were waiting for the Easter egg at the end of the movie and watching all the credits run. You know, there is a huge CGI budget. And Joe, you made a really interesting point, which was you cannot make a movie like this with a CGI budget like this if you're not part of a franchise. And that, right, to me is quite an interesting point. That's kind of stuck with me since we spoke about it last night. And I wonder if that's something that all of the sequelitis that we're seeing is kind of a unfortunate, unintended consequence.
The Marvel gimmick, you know, is, well, not the Marvel gimmick, but the Marvel universe is very, very CGI heavy. And that's right. I was thinking about the gimmick. The gimmick of having some revelation post-credits does something that we don't do very much these days, which is, you know, requires you to sit through the entire credit. And there are thousands.
Thousands. I literally.
It's not hundreds anymore. It's thousands of people.
It's
always
like, it's a good 10 minutes of, yeah. And then it's the China team. There's like 15, 20 different CGI companies. Yeah.
So, you know, I think the thing that struck me was, you know, these are necessarily, you know, multi tens of and even hundreds of million dollars movie to make. And it's kind of too bad that we'll never have an original franchise or an original movie with this level of visual delight, because there's just too much risk.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and wasted code,
right?
Okay, I can wrap this one up. For me, this is a big story wrapped up in a nice sizable package, easily an 8 out of 10.
And I think I gave the original one an 8 out of 10, so by reasoning, I have to give this one a 7 because it's just not as good, but it's a very mean 7. This is a fun movie, and despite what I've said at the beginning to kind of, you know, criticize it, it's genuinely more fun than something like Jurassic World. It feels fresher than any of the other comic book movies, and it's got a plot you can actually follow.
Yeah, it's funnier than Thor Ragnarok, which I thought was really funny. Yeah.
I thought Thor
it's more delightful.
You know,
it's more joyful.
It's more joyful, but Ragnarok is still a benchmark in recent years of Marvel.
But it's more like a spoof than a...
Oh, no, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
this isn't a spoof. This is an all-out
comedy.
Yeah. You're going to hate me for saying this, but I associate, maybe it's how I grew up, but I associate superheroes and comic books with Saturday mornings. You know, you've woken up, there's no school, and you're just watching something on television, and it's giddy, and it's fun, and it's silly, and there's no high stakes, which is why I love the original Superman movies. I love Captain America. And I kind of resent this, you know, Nolanization of the superhero universe with this dark, gritty, and there's a room for that. But if you're not a Christopher Nolan, and if you can't do a Dark Knight, then it just comes off horribly.
Well, you're not a graphic novel fan, right? Like, there's the joyful, like, comic.
Right.
And then there's the, like, serious graphic novel, you know, deep story.
Yeah, they're different art forms.
Yeah.
Like hiding behind the same kind of medium.
Correct.
But, like, you know, something like the Avengers Infinity War, which in its last act was trying to get into very solemn, dark territory, but it didn't carry any weight on me because it wasn't made by Christopher Nolan. It just felt... I didn't buy any of it. So I inherently like movies or superhero movies, which are more fun and smaller scale, and they're kind of lighthearted, and it seems like this is a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I think you'll enjoy this one.
Okay.
I think everyone will.
Yeah, I do too.
There's nothing to not like about this movie.
Very good. So, yes.
The end of Yazzie's birthday show. Yes.
Thank God. Take it away, Joe.
All right. Well, at movieworldless.com, let us know what you think of this podcast, of these movies, of us in general, of Yasti's birthday. Twitter.com/movieworldless, Facebook.com/movieworldless.
Do you want him to have another one?
No.
Should we celebrate again?
No. We definitely want Yasti to have another birthday.
Yes, of course.
I mean, maybe
that would be a good idea. Yes.
I would like Yasti to have many more birthdays.
Correct.
Okay. Just be careful what you say here. This is going out on the internet. People will listen to this and play it back when Yasti disappears under mysterious circumstances. Yes.
It was Ant-Man.
Only a week before my next birthday, yes.
Until our next podcast. Too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.